Well, as the Dakotas would say, how me takwe ape, ampeto de chante washte no pe chus apido. Dakota chaze mitawa kinde wakia obmane imake apido. And what I just said was for interpretation would be, hey y'all, it's with a good heart that I greet you this morning. My name in the Dakotas is He Who Walks with Lightning and Thunder. You know, we've had the privilege of speaking here. First of all, let me introduce my beautiful wife, Tina. This is Tina Likens. We have four kids, and a couple of them are married, and they live on the reservation with us this day and are all part of our ministry. I think we spoke here probably, it could have been 14, 15 years ago. So we've been able to do a lot. God has done so many wonderful things in those years, and I want to share a little bit about that with you. As you know, short-term mission trips can be dangerous. And what I mean by that is you can be working for US Air, living in Rock Hill, South Carolina, having a real nice job and everything else, and then go on a mission trip and God wreck your whole world. And that's pretty much what happened to us. So about, I think it was in 2000, we took a mission trip to South Dakota to a little village called Enemy Swim. So Gray, you got that right. That was where the village was, Enemy Swim. And we were up there doing a week's Bible, BBS, Vacation Bible School with these kids. During that week, we saw so much poverty and neglect and abuse. It was unbelievable. You know, I've been in the military before, so I was 10 years in the Air Force, so I got to see a lot of poverty overseas, but this was in America. We seen little kids just from babies all the way up to young teenagers that had, you know, clothes that didn't fit them. Some of them had lice. They had unkept wounds. They didn't have shoes on. It was like unreal. So it was kind of a shocking experience. Well, during that first week of Vacation Bible School, I actually got a chance to, there's a little girl in my class. Her name was Rosie Yuckpa. And Rose would not smile for nothing. But on the third day of Vacation Bible School, she smiled. And this is on his child's, if you went to just touch her. Say, hey, Rosie, how you doing? She'd wince like she thought you were going to hit her. So she came from a very abusive family. But it was unreal. That Wednesday, she smiled, and her little face just lit up the room. And so I gave her a nickname that day. I called her, because she was Dakota, and she was, her smile was like the sunshine. So that became Dakota Sunshine. So it started from a little girl named Rose Yuckpa. But by the end of that week, all those kids were calling them the Dakota Sunshine Kids. So they were there from sun up to sundown at that church in the morning, and it was unreal. And, you know, it was just heartbreaking to see these kids just want somebody to love them. You know, I think that's one of the biggest things about the gospel is to love. I think that's greater than anything else. You know, we all do this in life from time to time. We judge one another. This person doesn't look like me. They don't talk like me. They don't act like me. And yet Jesus calls us to love, right? To love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. It's amazing what happens when we start doing that. Through the years, you know, we lived, like I said, we lived in Rock Hill off of Norman Drive, had a nice house, and God called us into missions. It was unbelievable to think that, and I remember even asking, Lord, you got the wrong guy. I mean, I'll go if you want, but I'm a white guy. What am I going to do on an Indian reservation in South Dakota? Plus, this was South Dakota, not South Carolina. Big difference in the winter, I can tell you all that, as we have learned to know. They already had snow the other day. Like, at least it didn't stick. So anyways, we started to just minister to the children first. So through a long series of events, we sold our house on Norman Drive, and we bought a building. It looked like a big old barn on the side of a hill up in just outside of Sisseton on the Lake Traverse Reservation. And that began a new summer camp thing. So for a couple of years, we developed a summer camp for the kids. And we brought the kids up there, and they would stay for 4 days from Tuesday to Friday. And they got fed 3 meals a day and got snacks and everything else, had a lot of fun. We ended up building, we call it the Redneck Water Slide and all kinds of silly things that you know, comes from my ingenuity, I think, in the military and also working as a mechanic at US Air. But we have zip lines on this reservation and all kinds of fun things for these kids to do. So for years, we focused on the children. We had them up there. We made sure that during that week they were fed good, because these kids, even the schools up in our area do this, they'll feed the kids really heavy on Fridays and Mondays because they know they won't eat over the weekends. And it's just unreal to think people are like that in America. Now, we have poverty everywhere. It's in Charlotte, it's in Rock Hill, they're everywhere. But to see this in this kind of a scale, if you know anything about Native Americans, you realize that every treaty that was ever signed by the U.S. government, Uncle Sam broke every one of them. And they are the least and the less than everybody else. In fact, I would like to read you a little quote. I saved this. It was quote from Billy Graham's sermon in 1974, and he says, "The greatest moments of Native American history may lie ahead of us. If a great spiritual renewal and awakening should take place, the Native American has been the sleeping giant. He is awakening. The original Americans could become the great evangelist who will help win America for Christ. Remember these forgotten people." It's interesting how he said that in a sermon all those years ago. And you know what? They are the least of all people in America. They're looked down upon the most. Where we live on the reservation, there's definitely racism in a big way. We experienced it just ourselves because all of our friends when we first moved up there were Dakotas. One of the things I wanted to do to honor those people is make sure, as this white man, I want to know their language. So I learned the Dakota language so I could speak to them in Sioux. I want them to know their language matters. And like I said, I was in the military and U.S. Air, so I didn't have long hair until I moved up there. But I grew my hair long and would do the braid if I'm speaking to the elders of the tribe. Because, you know, let me tell you, we went to CIT, y'all familiar with that? Up at Rutherfordton, the Center of Intercultural Training. They send missionaries up there they're going all over the world. And one of the things our professor said that the definition of culture is the rules by which the game of life is played. And so their language matters. Now, on our reservation years ago, they had what they call the Catholic boarding school. And what they would do is they would forcibly take their children from the people, Native American people, put them in the boarding school, cut their hair, and beat them if they spoke in their native language. Now, could you imagine that happening to one of your kids today? You know? One of the elders told me one time, he said, "I learned to speak English not because I wanted to, but I had no choice." He said, "My back was so worn out from being beaten." And that is, to this day, it's unbelievable that that stuff has happened all across this country. Our state has 9 reservations. The most impoverished place in all of America is Pine Ridge Reservation. It's in the southwest corner of South Dakota. We live in the northeastern part of the state on the Lake Travis Reservation, but there are 9 reservations in that state. And man, they tout the man's life expectancy in Pine Ridge, 41 years old. Teen suicide rates on the reservations, 7 times greater than national average. These kids, only half of them will ever graduate from high school, and out of that, maybe 1 or 2% will ever go to college. And it is so abusive in the way, you know, they live their lives. It's heartbreaking to see it, you know? And it's because they feel so less than us as white people. Well, like I told you, for years I've had the privilege of leading probably at least 200-300 kids to Christ at the summer camp. And it's been awesome to see them grow in their faith. But the problem always got me was I had to send them back home, the home families that didn't know Jesus. So through the years, we've been developing, in fact, we're in the process right now of our new evangelistic discipleship outreach center on the reservation. So it has grown dramatically, what's happening. But now the focus is on discipling the believer, the native believers, the adults, discipling them to understand, what does it mean to be a follower of Jesus? How do I live my life? You know, what's grace? You know, how do I live in grace? And we have seen a great outpouring that's beginning to happen. In fact, it's pretty wild. We just went to, Tina and I were part of the Will Graham outreach that was at Pine Ridge Reservation. And I'm going to share a little tidbit with you here, what happens with religion versus a relationship with Jesus, okay? During this event, it was awesome. They had all kinds of Native American people from Pine Ridge Reservation there. Many had received the gospel of Christ, but they had this man who was I'll just say from a religious institution that wasn't part of the Will Graham Association, but he was passing out these little pamphlets. And these little pamphlets, on the front cover, it said, "Tukonshala," which means grandfather, which is their version of God. "Tukonshala is the devil." Now, can you imagine trying to win somebody for Jesus like that? I'm sure you all have met a Bible thumper or two in your day, right? Did they do anything good for you? Don't they usually chase you away? I remember when I was in the Air Force, there was a man that I worked with, and he was one of those Bible thumpers before I knew Jesus. And here every night he would just tell us how we're going to burn in hell and how God hated us and all this stuff. And never once did I ever see love. Never once. And so, just like all the rest of the guys, we just say, "He's crazy. Stay away from him." It wasn't until I found somebody who really lived their faith and showed the example that Jesus showed by loving. And I'll tell you, love can get you a long ways. You know, as a missionary, Tina and I never expected to be missionaries. We thought we were going to live in Rock Hill and live there for the rest of our lives, you know, in God's country where the weather's warm. And then God did something different, you know. Our Father in heaven loves us so much, it's unbelievable. He has made every possible way for us to come to know him. But he wants us to do something. In Matthew 28, remember what it says? Go and make converts. Go and make what? Disciples. Teaching them all the things that Jesus taught us. You know, I often think about the Jesus example, and it's about love. I mean, I'll beat that on the pulpit to the day I die. Love. Love is what changed the world, you know? The love of God for his creation. The love that he'd send his son to die a horrible death on the cross for us. And to be spat on and called names while he was hanging on that cross for our sins. Wow. And Father, what did he say? Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. This is what love is. It's about living our faith where other people see Jesus in you. Let them be drawn to you by your light. That's what we're doing on the reservation. You know, living up there in this ministry, we started a 501c3 because we couldn't find any covering organization at the time, so it became Dakota Sunshine Ministries. My wife wrote the 501c3 in 30 days. Remember, Debbie? It was a miracle. In 30 days, it came back approved from the government, which is unheard of. So through the years, this whole thing, it's a miracle when you get up on that reservation and you see what God's done. The little bunk houses, it looks like a little west town. You know, I mean, the big barn, the indoor climbing, all these things. It's unbelievable what God has done because he loves those native kids too. He does. And he loves those native people. Well, our ministry now, like I said, is shifting. We're focusing more. We're still doing our summer camp during the summer, but now we're focusing more on the discipleship and raising up native pastors. I start teaching a school of ministry in January this year. It's a 3-month class, and it's going to take about 12 men signed up for it right now. And it's teaching them the pastoral epistles, understanding 1 and 2 Timothy and Titus. What does it mean to be a pastor? How do I live my life? How am I an example to these people? Because so often, and we see this over and over on the reservation, is they'll have a man who was the pastor of the church, and he's getting ready to move somewhere, and he'll just pick somebody, okay, you can take the church. And the man has not been discipled, has no idea what it really means to be a pastor. And you know how the enemy plays with that? You know, I've got power and authority. Well, let me tell you, from a pastor's perspective, and as a pastor, we are on the bottom of the food chain, okay? We're the foot washers. That's what we're called to be, to love one another and to be an example of Jesus. Please pray for us, you know. As in the ministry, we need financial support. You know, there's a lot going on in this reservation. And we also have summer mission teams that come up during the summer, you know. You know, in the past, when we do summer camp, it's always hard to find staffers for the summer to come up because, you know, we're missionaries and our staffers usually raise funds for themselves to come up. We have mission teams that come out, outreach missions that come up on the reservation, and they'll be staying at the facility during the daytime. They might do an outreach project or something on the camp facility, but then they go in the villages in the afternoon and do outreach. We also have construction teams. There's a lot of needs up there. We've got a big barn that we're getting ready to convert into an insulated building. We've had a furnace that was donated to it, but it has to be done. So this is going to be the new discipleship center. So all year long, we can use that facility to minister to these people and raise up believers in Christ, to raise up disciples, which is what we're called to do. So I love missions, so I'm looking forward, and I'm really excited about hearing about Gray's mission over in Turkey, because that's one thing I always said would be really cool, to bring some Native guys and go over there to Turkey, because Native American people, when they go on mission trips, they're believers, people just love it, because it's almost like, wow, man, you're a Native American, you live on a reservation, and when they wear their regalia, it's amazing, but they're beautiful people, and they're not forgotten. God has never forgotten any of us, has he? He made every tongue, every tribe, in every nation, and he doesn't make mistakes. So, blessed be the name of the Lord. Thank you for the privilege to come back and visit with you again. Tina and I are really blessed to see you here. And I love y'all, and I mean that, because you know something, there's a word for family in the Dakota language. It's called Teoshpa. Teoshpa means that we are relatives. Even though we might not share the same bloodline, we are relatives if you're a follower of the Lord Jesus Christ. So, Doksta ake mitakwe ape, which means thank you, and I'll see you again. God bless y'all.
All right. Good night, then. No, that's okay. You already forgot it. That's all right. I forgot all of mine, too. All right. Well, I just want to say thank you for sharing that, Don. That was very encouraging, very challenging. Man, it's what an amazing thing that God is doing through them. Man, it's really powerful. So we're going to share a little bit about our trip to Turkey. Sven and I got an opportunity. God really opened some doors for us to be able to go on a really cool educational trip to see the biblical Turkey. If you open your Bible and you look at the back in the map and you see Paul's journey, most of his missionary work was done in Turkey. And in fact, most of Christian history took place in that area. A lot of the early and big influential things that we are spiritual inheritors of, the big discussions, the big confessions of faith, they come from that area. And so we want to share with you a little bit about that. First stop is Constantinople. This is a church called the Hagia Sophia. This is a very, very famous, very, very old church. It's now called Istanbul, if you know the song by the Four Lads. You know the song by the Four Lads. That's great. yes, in Constantinople, Emperor Constantine built this church. And for almost half a millennia, this is where all the big decisions of Eastern Orthodoxy took place. Christianity, big decisions took place in this building. If you go to the next picture, you can see the inside. The dome is tall enough to fit the Statue of Liberty. It is, as you can tell, it's now a mosque, so when you go in, you have to wear a head covering, you have to take your shoes off and stuff like that. So, next picture, I know we've got a lot of pictures, is Nicaea. This is the palace wall of Nicaea. If you've ever heard of the Nicene Creed, has anyone ever heard of that? It's a really important confession of faith, verifying that we believe that Christ is the Son of God. Really important statement of faith took place here inside these palace walls. This is a palace wall. This is really the only picture I could find. I didn't just put it up there because I'm in it, although it doesn't really hurt now that I see it. And the next picture, you can see that the actual basilica where they held the council is underwater. It earthquake happened and it just kind of fell into the lake. I don't know how that happens, but that's what happened. So the next slide is Thyatira.
Yeah, so this is Thyatira. So this is kind of starting our journey with going to the seven different churches. So, that was right in front of a main road. It's kind of hard to see that from that angle. And then you'll see on the next slide was a Roman university building as well. So this site was one of the smaller sites that we were able to go. And while we were there, our professor would kind of explain the context of situation, and then he would read the letter to us. So it was really, really powerful in all these different settings that we got to stand in these sites and they would read the letter to us, and we just got to visualize what was happening as we were standing in these different sites.
Yeah, and like she's saying, when we started going to the biblical sites and we got out of the history, it really helped take us out of like kind of our modern mindset and to see temples and altars and buildings and streets and markets. It was just really, really amazing. So this next site is Pergamum. That is the Temple of Zeus in Pergamum. And if you go to the next picture, you can see this is standing from the top of the Acropolis, which means city top. And so you're standing on top of the city and you're overlooking the rest of the city. And so this Pergamum was never at any point in history conquered. When I asked my professor why, he said, wait till you get there. And when you get there, it's just straight up, just sheer cliffs going straight up to the top where the city is. And
we had to take a little gondola thing to get up to the top. We did not climb that. Though we were interested in it, we did not do that.
Yeah. It was pretty steep. But anyway, so the next picture, I know we're blistering through these things. Good job keeping up, guys. I appreciate that. They're awesome up there, by the way. This is Smyrna. Smyrna was one of my favorite places to visit. What you see right there, these columns are surrounding what's called the Agora, or that's the marketplace. It's where all the business happened. And if you go to the next picture, you see that it was two stories in Smyrna. And these two stories, they had markets just all over the place. And we actually got to go down in there and see the hand-drawn signs and paintings that they put over over their markets to show, like they'd paint a ship if it was goods to be sold to sailors, or they would paint like an altar if it was things you were taking to the temples or things like that. And so it was just really, really cool stuff. But what's fascinating about Smyrna is Smyrna was actually a poor town. And so when in Revelation, Jesus tells the Smyrnans, you are poor, but you're really rich. And so what we see here is that oftentimes, and it kind of goes back to what Don was saying, oftentimes heaven's perspective and earth's perspective are very different. Those who are poor are often the most rich. And so these people, these Smyrnans that were looked around upon compared to the other churches in the letters of Revelation were actually quite wealthy in the Lord. So the next picture, we see Sardis, and this is the temple of Artemis. And you can see in the bottom left corner, there's a little brick building. So if you go to the next picture, I want to show you the temple because during the 300s, when Christianity became the official religion of the empire, they started building churches. And so this is actually a Byzantine-era church right next to the Temple of Artemis. And if you walked around the Temple of Artemis, you could see crosses and you could see words etched into the temple that would say like light or life in Greek. And you could see them all over the temple because Christians would go around and write those in the temple. So if you go to the next one, you see an early Jewish synagogue. This was the kind of place that Paul would go when he would go to, when he was traveling in Turkey, he would go to these synagogues first to share the gospel. And he would stand in a place just like this, at this little table where they read the Torah. He would stand at this at these places and he would explain the scriptures to them and he would teach them about Jesus before he would go to the Gentiles. And so speaking of which, look, go to the next picture. This is a gymnasium and an education center for your average Roman citizen. This is called the gymnasium, that courtyard where they did the exercise, and then that big building is a two-story building where they had classes and stuff like that. And so Paul would literally, he'd start at the synagogues, and if he was rejected, he'd go to the Gentiles. And so you see these two buildings right next to each other, and it's just really cool.
The next slide is just something fun that we got to do. If y'all have me on Facebook, you might have seen some of these pictures, but we got to ride in a hot air balloon over for sunrise over the different parts of Turkey, and it was absolutely beautiful. That's why it's dark outside when the picture is being taken. If you go to the next picture, that's me and my friend Hannah. You can see we're sticking our heads out, scared to death that we might drop a phone or something as we're taking pictures. But yeah, it was just a really, really cool experience. There was about 16 of us in one of the baskets, which is on the next picture, and that kind of gives you a huge visual of where we were at. That was none of us took that picture. That was our captain of the air balloon. He had like a little stick with a camera, 360 camera, and he took this picture. But we got to just go and to see from that angle, we could see some of the different sites that we were visiting that day and the days before. We didn't have our professor in our balloon, he was in another one, but he kind of told us, you know, you're going to be able to see a variety of sights from this angle.
Yeah, we were over 1,000 meters. I don't know what that translates to feet, but it does translate to terrifying to me. So in the next picture, you see these are the white cliffs. That little black dot there, you can kind of see it. That's a person. These white cliffs are made by natural hot springs. And there's these humongous, way taller than our building here, these humongous white cliffs. So if you go to the next picture, this is the city on top of it. This is what's called the Plutonium, which is the temple of Pluto, or Hades. And this is probably one of my favorite things to see the whole trip, was to see this site right here. So what happened in ancient times is, if you see the little gateway at the bottom, you can kind of see it, and there's a natural spring coming out of it. There's also carbon monoxide coming out of it, and it's very dangerous. But what they would do is they would, during the worship that took place to these pagan gods, people would go down into this area. We couldn't go down in there because it would kill you. The carbon monoxide concentration is so strong, it was the closest we could get. You would go down there and you would have these near-death experiences, and you would speak these visions that took place, and people would follow these prophecies. And to see just all of that before, you can't see it, I think you can maybe see it in the next picture. You can sort of see the bubbles coming up, and it's the carbon monoxide, and it's very just toxic gas. And so in Revelation 9, when he talks about the keys to the abyss, this is the abyss he's talking about. He's talking about Pluto's or Hades' gate to the underworld. And just to know that when they heard that, these are the things that they were thinking of. They knew that Paul was addressing the pagan worship and the false gods. So if you go to the next picture, that's just a Roman road. That's a Roman road. And then we're running out of time. Actually, let's just keep going. Go a couple more pictures. One more. Another. Another. There we go. We're going to stop here. This will be our last picture. I put way too many pictures. We're going to stop here at these house churches in the church in Laodicea. This is Laodicea. This is one of my favorite sites. Right here is a house church. So right there that you see on the screen is a living space in the center of the home. And so you see the columns in that little middle area. There was gardens and there was a pool for gathering water and to let rainwater in to cool the house. And so there would be lounge spaces all around. And if you go to the next picture, you see an alcove. Now what that is, that's actually a living room with little living room with bedrooms on the side of it. And that alcove was added later because this was a house church and it was a wealthy house church. It's one of the earliest and best house churches we've found so far. We've only discovered about 20% of each of these cities. So this is one of the best, earliest house churches that we've found. And so in Revelation chapter 3, when he's talking to the church in Laodicea, he says, "See, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and eat with him and he with me." Now, a lot of times we use this to talk about how we're sharing the gospel. But if we remember, these were written to churches, people who were supposed to be worshiping Jesus. So they're here in these churches and they're worshiping, but Jesus is not a part of it. They have taken Christ out of their worship. They've removed him from the equation and they're worshiping without Jesus. And they're saying, "Look, I'm here if you'll let me. If you'll let me in, I will join you." And so that was a really powerful. You want to skip down to my leaders? All right, skip down.
You can skip down a couple. One more. Yeah, another one actually. And then another one. That was it. That is Miletus. And if you look in Acts chapter 20, if you're familiar, you might have been like, "Oh, I feel like I've heard that before." Well, if you read in Acts, then you've probably heard of Miletus. This was one of Paul's, the area that he was in Miletus was people that were just really following him, that were really following the Lord. They had a great relationship. And so Paul was here, and I'm going to read a passage in Acts 20. So Acts 20, starting in verse 36, says, "And when he had said these things, he knelt down and prayed with them all. And there was much weeping on the part of all. They embraced Paul and kissed him, being sorrowful most of all because of the word he had spoken, and that they would not see his face again, and they accompanied him to his ship." So here at Miletus, at that very site, is where Paul was, where I just read was taking place. And they're sad because he's leaving. He's going to continue to do his missionary work, and they're thinking this is probably the last time we're going to see him, because where he's going, we don't know those next stops, and there's a chance that he's probably going to die. And so a very, very emotional time happened in that place that we were at. So we were able to sit there in that area, and our professor read from Acts chapter 20, and I don't think that there was a dry eye in the room, because just to think that Paul was here, the way that he had this connection with these people and the impact that he had, you almost felt the presence of just this man that just carried the gospel wherever he went. And it was a challenge to us too, that, you know, as we're going about our lives, are we being intentional with sharing the gospel as Paul was? Are we making disciples who are following the Lord? And kind of like what they were just sharing about, just the importance of making disciples. These people were crying and were sorrowful of it, but Paul continued on because he knew this is what the Lord had called him to do. So no matter how hard it was to leave those things behind, he pressed on and he continued on, knowing that this is what I'm called to do as a follower of Christ. We have more pictures. We have like little souvenirs and stuff. And so if you're interested in hearing more, feel free to come grab us. We'd love to share a meal with you, show you some more pictures, talk a little bit more about it. But that's kind of our Turkey trip in a little bit of a nutshell. So thank y'all for listening.
Do we have another song? We do not? Just the invitation? Okay. All right. So we're going to have a time of invitation. If there's anyone here, the band can go ahead and come up. If there's anyone here who doesn't know Jesus, if there's anyone here who feels like life has beaten them down or they're too far from God to be able to have a relationship with him, I want you to know Christ died for you. As Don was saying, there is no one beyond God's love, no matter how small you think you are or how insignificant you think you are. God loves you, and he sent his son to die for you. And if you want to become a Christian, we want to have that conversation with you. I'm here. Don will probably talk with you. Chuck's up there. Anyone up here on this stage would love to have that conversation with you because we care about you, and we want to know that you know Jesus. All right?